music and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I'm Robin, and I'm here to introduce today's program for us. Care of SFU Public Square, we are able to bring you the majority of a recording that was done last Wednesday of a panel called Queer Voices, Universities as Catalysts for 2 SLGBTQIA+ Advocacy and Support. And the panel leans into a reasoning where attacks on the queer community at large are increasing worldwide, including here in BC and Canada. And universities have become even more important for queer individuals. As places of education and dialogue, campuses can often provide a welcoming and supportive environment for all students, including those in the queer community, to embark on journeys of discovery, knowledge, belonging, and acceptance. And this panel event explores the role of universities in promoting acceptance and support of the queer community. You'll hear the speakers discuss the importance of inclusive policies, curriculum development, and support services for queer students, faculty, and staff, as well as consider some of the unique challenges faced by the community in post-secondary education. So without further ado, as I said, here is the majority of the panel that was recorded on Wednesday, June the 5th, here at SFU.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Queer Voices, Universities as Catalysts for 2 SLGBTQIA+ Advocacy and Support. My name is Kirk Hill. I'm the moderator for today's event. I'm the Assistant Dean of External Relations for the SFU Beauty School of Business. I'm also co-chair of the SFU Queer Collective. The SFU Queer Collective provides an inclusive home for 2 SLGBTQIA+ graduate students, faculty, staff, alumni, and postdoctoral fellows at SFU to cultivate belonging, community, and queer joy. At the heart of our mission is a commitment to anti-oppression values, the promotion of equity and justice, and the nurturing of intersectional solidarities. The SFU Queer Collective represents a vibrant and skilled network dedicated to resource sharing, collaboration, advocacy, empowerment, and the protection and celebration of our members and the larger queer community. Please approach this event with an open-minded and open heart. I'm going to briefly introduce our speakers for this morning and ask them to introduce themselves more fully. Jen Marchbank is a professor at SFU in Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies, as well as the former president of the Surrey Pride Society, and remains on the board.
Thank you, Kirk. Yeah, well, yes, I am a professor in GSWS. My most recent projects have been on elder abuse in the queer community. I also work on trans and non-binary youth, and I'm currently on the board of Surrey Pride, where I am Director of Seniors Programs, and I'm happy to say that I'm running a Rainbow Seniors social program.
Thank you, Jen. That's great. Jude Ma is our out-on-campus coordinator at SFU.
I'm the out-on-campus coordinator for the Simon Fraser Student Society, and then my background before that, I did my undergrad at UBC, and I was an organizer with the Pride Collective, which was an AMS resource group. So basically the equivalent of out-on-campus, but entirely student-run. And then I'm also from Alberta, and I think we all know that's kind of been a prominent province in the news lately with their anti-queer queer and trans rhetoric. Happy to be here today.
Thank you for joining us. Mackenzie Colton is a director of learning at EGAL Canada.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mackenzie Colton. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the director of learning, as mentioned, at EGAL Canada. So I oversee a phenomenal team of instructional designers, facilitators, research officers, working nationally to create curriculum and resources across a variety of different sectors, including within the schools, corporate businesses, government, healthcare. We try to do a little bit of everything everywhere. So hopefully we can bring a little bit of that knowledge today. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And Norma Liz is a trans activist and refugee advocate from Lebanon. She's a Vancouver area journalist, activist, and works for Rainbow Refugee.
Thank you so much, Kirk. Hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Norma. My pronouns are she and her. As mentioned, I'm a trans refugee from Lebanon. I moved to Vancouver in 2018, and I'm so happy to be here. I started with Rainbow Refugee as a sponsorship coordinator back in 2020, and I'm now the communications manager. I have my background in journalism and communication arts. In everything that I do, I try as much as possible to support queer and trans folks from the Middle East and North Africa. And I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being here as well. So my first question is really around universities and how can universities collaborate effectively with local 2SLGBTQIA+, or as I'll refer to as queer organizations from now on, to ensure that campus policies and support services are truly inclusive and responsive to diverse needs of queer and trans individuals. If you can you mention any specific initiatives or programs that have been successful in addressing the mental health and well-being of queer and trans students, faculty, and staff on university campuses, and how can these be scaled or replicated? And maybe if I start off with Jude and then Jen and then ask for Norma and Mackenzie.
I think a big aspect of this, which in my head is kind of straightforward, but in practice is not always followed, is just to prioritize what queer and trans students, staff, faculty are asking for. At the end of the day, these are the most knowledgeable people. And so what their demands are, what their asks are, when they're pointing out the gaps in these systems, that's, you know, where the university should start with their policies. Again, in practice, that's not necessarily followed. In terms of specific initiatives or programs within Out on Campus, an initiative that had started before I came into the role was the We Just Need to Pee campaign. And so that was where posters were put up in bathrooms throughout the different campuses for SFU. Some of them were definitions of the word trans, and basically the campaign highlighted the need for trans folks to feel comfortable in bathrooms, that it was a normal thing, that, you know, this wasn't a big ask. It was just kind of one of those things where, why is this being a politicized aspect? In terms of other initiatives out on campus, as a department of the Student Society, we have an overall budget that we divide up with things like programming, advertising, stuff like that. But one of the biggest, big portions that we have is for gender-affirming products. And so some of you may understand that gender-affirming products are quite expensive and quite inaccessible for a lot of students. And so through this, we are able to kind of bridge the gap. And so we provide things like binders, trying to think of what else, binders, packers, breast forms, things like that. And so again, they're all free for students. We're navigating kind of how much folks can take every year, but at my personal opinion is I don't want it to be a barrier. We've also started like resource guides for students. My assistant has been really good with kind of navigating guides for legal name changes and things like that within the university. With my background, being part of the Pride Collective at UBC, because that was an entirely student-run organization, different. And so because we were all just students, we weren't able to do a lot of the higher up, higher end advocacy. And so a lot of our focus was on just creating a safe space for students. We really wanted to prioritize kind of having bringing in joy, bringing in just support and safety. But again, from that, we had a limited budget. We were all just students. And so some of the things we had were discussion groups. We had something called Pride Week, which we had usually in January. And so that was just a week long kind of string of events. Something that did happen after I left was the Pride Collective, mainly they had started, I think, the Trans Coalition. But they were able to advocate for and actually bring in gender-affirming care to the student health plan, which was a huge success. It was quite a contentious topic. I remember kind of talking to some friends and some folks that I still know who are at UBC. But again, like, it was quite amazing to see them be able to bring that in. And so that is something that's on my radar and I'd love to bring in. But navigating that is tricky. It's not as clear cut as I would like. Yeah.
That's awesome, Jude. Thank you so much. Jen, if you have any.
Not so much programming, Kirk, but just some history. As I mentioned, I'm a former president of Surrey Pride Society and I'm still involved. And I found that every year that I've been involved, either the Surrey campus or the Vice President's Externals Office has been active in sponsoring Surrey Pride and having some kind of relationship there, including in one point about providing student ambassadors to work at the Surrey Pride Festival. So that gives a message. And this year, the university through EDI are sponsoring the Masters of Ceremony and Mistresses of Ceremony at the festival. So this all sends out a message beyond the university audience itself that SFU is an inclusive organisation. And I'm really, really pleased this year that it's been recognised that the centre of the university has to be involved, not just the Surrey campus or other or certain individuals within the university. So that's come forward. And I think that just makes it very public. It sends a message to the broader community that universities are involved on being open and inclusive and reaching out. And I think that's the kind of behaviour that we would love to encourage to continue into the future. And I think especially here in Canada, for me, having come from working in other parts of the world, I feel that the universities are much more part of our local community here than they. So that just adds to the importance of the institution reaching out and saying, this is what we're doing. But also, I think that the work that is done within the institution, the work that we are supported in doing, coming from gender, sexuality and women's studies, I have just recently completed a tour of every health authority in British Columbia, talking about how elder abuse looks differently and requires perhaps different policy responses or practice responses in the queer community. And that was funded by a Kickstarter grant from my faculty. So, you know, having an openness and a willingness to recognise the type of knowledge mobilisation work we need to do around issues that are perhaps not necessarily normative ones. I'm really grateful to my Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences for funding that. So that different ways that the university can engage.
And Norma and Mackenzie, anything to add?
Yeah, thank you. Not to add, not that there's any other major points to add to what you folks just shared, but we at Rainbow Refugee, we have a very, very, very strong relationship with SFU. We usually host a lot of events at SFU, and the relationship is through decades of mutual support and understanding and advocacy. We have the board of director, Sherlyn Jordan, who is a professor at SFU and who helped us with the relationship with being present. And whenever we have an opportunity to educate or share or support staff just be more inclusive. I know, and as you folks mentioned, what you are doing is already your way ahead other universities, and you implement a lot of inclusive practices in your work. One thing that I can add would definitely be training and professional development for staff when it comes to how to better support queer and 2SLGBTQIA+ newcomers and students. And as Jude mentioned, we know that in other provinces now, the conversation about, unfortunately, the conversation about the queer community this year is not very positive. So having having professors and having educators or teachers who are just showing empathy and inclusion towards students can really support a lot. It all starts in the classroom. It all starts in feeling safe when we are in a small room where we are here to learn more. So we want to feel safe and included. Networking and alliances that you are already doing with a lot of organizations, and resource sharing, whatever resources you have, if you can share with other unis or other small groups or committees to support them on how to better, on how to be more inclusive.
Mackenzie.
So many really great points already made. Jumping off a few of them too, with this idea that change takes a long time. And I think there's been some really phenomenal examples. Brock University comes to mind with their name change policy. They launched and created that pilot within less than a year. And so to kind of demonstrate really concrete examples of how when we have a solid group of people that are able to come together and uplift these ideas with buy-in from senior leadership, we actually can make these changes quickly in our systems to really ensure that students do feel safe. So to jump off of Norma's point too, just about the current climate in the world, knowing that this isn't a time to take 5 to 6 years to implement this. We have to act now, and we have to approach these challenges with a really strong mentality that we can make differences, and we're doing that for not only just students, but everyone that steps foot on campus.
Awesome. And I'd like to add, last year we I sort of led the effort to get SFU in the Pride Parade for Vancouver the first time. And once we got in with 5 weeks' notice, I was Joy had already committed the president to be there to lead the group. And then Yabam, who's our VP people, I wrote her. And within a day, I had an organizing committee of about 12 people, a communications plan, and the budget to sort of do everything. And so we've had, pride flags created with SFU branding that are now used across the campus at convocation and other events. And Yabam's committed to funding the Vancouver Pride indefinitely, our participation in that. So I think the desire for the university to try to figure out how they can support us as well has been very evident to me. So it's good to see that sort of is forefront of their thinking right now. Sort of moving over to curriculum itself, is in what ways can curriculum development be adapted to incorporate queer and trans perspectives across academic disciplines, fostering a more inclusive learning environment for all students? And maybe I'll start with Jen and then Mackenzie, because you talked a little bit about that.
Well, I've been developing curricula for over 30 years. But I also have to preface this by saying I'm working in gender, sexuality, and women's studies. So the curriculum does incorporate queer and trans perspectives in most cases. But how do you do that? You have to do that in a way that doesn't alienate those who might be fearful of these issues. I'm not going to say hatred, but maybe fearful, have some trepidation. So it has to be in a way that, for me, it says, this is just part of the curriculum that we are presenting. So I teach everything from a 100 level through to the mandatory feminist theory class for my grad students, and it's incorporated throughout. But I do think that despite some of the anti-SOGI stuff that we've been hearing recently, for those of you who are maybe listening from outside of British Columbia, British Columbia, along with Alberta, has a set of resources created by the Vancouver ARC Foundation by and for teachers in the K-12 system called SOGI, that's the Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. They're often misrepresented as being a curriculum, as if we are mandatorily trying to impose ideas upon children. But really, these are a set of resources that allow educators to have something to draw on if they wish just to be more inclusive and diverse and equitable in their teaching. So one resource might be something in English 8, which discusses literature that might have a same-sex element in it. Or it might be something in Math 10 that has a family structure where a child is being raised by grandparents rather than by their bio parents, whatever. These are a set of resources for teachers. And what I would like to see is that to actually expand and come into the post-secondary sector so that we have an economist who just normalizes talking about a household economy, which may be of two or three persons of different generations or whatever. So I would like to just say, you know, let's have more of that so that you don't have to go to a gender studies class. You can be in, I don't know, marketing and say, how do we market to this demographic? So that it's there and it's discussed in every option.
There's a professor, Steve Cates, who's from our community, and his focus is on marketing to the gay community or the queer community. So it's right up your alley, Jen.
Yep, yeah. More of it.
Absolutely. Mackenzie.
Thank you. Yeah, just to expand too on some of Jen's points, that's something that we're really proud of at EGAL is starting those partnerships with universities to do just that, Jen. We've partnered with a few departments within various Canadian universities to support them, because a lot of times there is that interest, but not the capacity necessarily internally to execute it or wanting more of the national lens. And when we look at what's happening within K-12, we have funding from the Ministry of Ontario, the Education Ministry, and that's something that we brought to them right away is to outline. There are so many teachers or educators that say, oh, well, I just teach science. This isn't my area. I'll leave that to the health teacher, or I teach math. And so at EGAL, what we created is our Relearn and React series, which is 5 animated videos for grade 7 to 12. And they're across 5 different areas of curriculum linked directly to Ontario curriculum that are maybe a little bit outside of where you'd expect them. So for example, we have an animated video on queer love letters. We have an animated video on queer mathematicians throughout history. So that math teacher that says to me in an educational session, oh, I teach math, so I'll put a pride flag up in my room, but it's not in my curriculum. Now I can say, actually, we've created this video for you. Here you go. And here's a teaching tool along with it. So I think just to Jen's point, normalizing it. And at the post-secondary level, also remembering for those instructors that there are queer and trans people that you are teaching to. Oftentimes when curriculum's developed, it's developed about a community, forgetting that that community is often sitting in the seats that you're teaching to. And so how is that lens being brought in as well, that it's not necessarily just this outside community or this external group that we're talking about? These are people that are sometimes teaching the content, sitting in the first row, wanting to engage with it as well. And how can we include those voices in the teaching as well and making sure that everyone's represented through incorporating different lens of intersectionality and various lived experience?
Jude or Norma, do you have anything to add? Or
yeah, I can add some. I always find it funny. My journey in university was definitely kind of one up and down. I did graduate with a major in gender, race, sexuality, and social justice, but that wasn't the one that I started out with. So I actually originally was majoring in anthropology, and for a variety of reasons, I definitely came to the realization that it was a problematic major and just way of knowledge, etc. But one of the big reasons why I ended up switching was because I realized that all of the papers that I was writing, everything I was discussing, I made it about gender, I made it about sexuality, and while that does connect with anthropology, like, it wasn't part of the curriculum. There wasn't a class specifically about that. It was all different views, but nothing was explicitly like, let's talk about gender, let's talk about sexuality. And so I had written papers on the history of Two-Spirit people. I remember one of the classes I wrote a paper about drag and how, especially in Vancouver, there's a really robust drag community and there's a lot of non-binary performers. And so how does drag and gender expression, like euphoria, all of that kind of stuff. And when I was talking to fellow students, they were like, how are you, like, this doesn't make sense. You know, this isn't the proper place for those kind of discussions. I don't understand, like, how you can connect. And in my head, I was like, well, I don't really care what you think. I'm still going to write it. And the prof ended up talking to me afterwards, and she had said this was one of the, like, her most favorite papers that she had read. And so I think, like Jen was saying, like, we have always been there. We will always be here within these classes. And so why is it not a normalized thing? Like, you know, why does it have to be this specific section of something? Or why does it always have to be gender or sexuality studies? Why can't it just be all incorporated? Why does there have to be a sense of, like, others and, you know, what is normal, what is not normal? And so, I don't know, I think it's just important to make it normalized and accessible, because again, like, we have always been there, we will always be here, we deserve a space in these classes. We shouldn't have to be able to talk about like ourselves and our journey or those close to us, and only be able to talk about those things within a specific major or set of classes.
And just to add to what everyone said, inviting guest speakers and lecturers to the classes usually make a lot of difference. Yes, we can have inclusive courses, inclusive languages, but when students, when they meet someone in person and when they hear the stories from the people themselves, a lot of them, they change their perspective on how they see SOGI education, like Jen mentioned, or trans backgrounds or non-binary stories. So I noticed from participating in few speaking engagements at universities or schools across BC, we go there and students can be a bit not open to ask questions, but then the minute we tell them there is no right or wrong questions, feel free to ask any, whatever you want to ask, and if we feel uncomfortable to answer, we will let you know. Whenever we lead with this, it will give the students a sense of, okay, this is a safe space. We are working on creating a safer space for everyone. I can ask, I can feed my curiosity. So I believe inviting to us LGBTQIA scholars or activists and professionals to give guest lectures and participate in speaker series can provide students with a diverse perspective and maybe introduce them to new role models, because sometimes some students who are struggling with their gender identity or sexual orientation, all that it takes is to meet someone in person. When we read about something or when we see it on YouTube or on TV, it's not the same as meeting people in person. I know for a fact I understood my gender identity the first time I met a trans person in real life. And it was an aha moment for me. I'm like, yeah, this is who I am. This is where I belong. So it really helped.
That's awesome. It just sort of emphasizes the need for safe space and education and exposure. And like you said, especially elementary school and high school right now, what they're going through. And so having the role models that they can see is so important. And I think that's something that is, something that we as part of the queer community really have the responsibility to do on a daily basis when we can, right? Considering the intersexual identities within the queer and trans community, including refugees and asylum seekers, how can universities work with local organizations to develop targeted resources addressing their unique challenges amidst socio-political climates? Maybe I'll start with Norma and Mackenzie.
Definitely working with local organizations to conduct need assessments to identify the specific challenges faced by 2SLGBTQIA+ refugees and newcomers, because the needs and the struggles, or let's go with needs, the needs that refugees go through in order for them to access education or to access support can be completely different from anyone else from the LGBTQIA community. We can think of community advisory board. We can establish advisory board that includes refugees. When we hear from them, when we sit